Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table, we dance when we're able. We're routine to call a scene, to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table, our shows are more mid-able. The many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're off to mad in Camelot, we sing from the die of Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Ma'am, sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
Oh, didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help, I'm being repressed,
bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
The Terrible! All rise for the King, Caesar the Terrible, and the Knights of the Round Table!
In constant sorrow all through his days, I am a man of constant sorrow. Trouble all my days. I bid farewell to old Kentucky, the place where I was born and raised, the place where he no pleasure here on earth I found. For in this world I'm bound to ramble, I have no friends to help me now.
He has no friends to help him now.
Never expect to see you again. For I'm bound to ride that northern railroad. Perhaps I'll die upon this train.
Perhaps you'll die upon this train.
Well, I am.
nothing happening here. But what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn, and nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. And people in the street singing songs and a carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our sides. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop. Children, what's that sound?
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. Is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, my woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. Grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace and we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. Came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the broad.
out waiting nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Hello, everybody. It's old King Shaziz the Terrible. Looks like I'm alone today because I believe all the knights either slept in or are out fighting dragons and such. So I'm sure they'll show up around about. They'll probably call me right in the middle of a good portion of the show or something like that. Anyway, today's show's about clever toys with real-world solutions and more. You know, there's a lot of individuals out there in the world that live in a lot of different climates of the world. But it's amazing how the creator of our world here basically designed nature to be the best teacher that there is. So, you know, on this beautiful planet that we've got that our good Lord's put down here, provided for us, we got everything we need. I mean, the Earth provides heat, it provides cool, it provides electricity, it provides everything. And if mankind could learn how to work in harmony with the gifts that we've been given from our Creator, it's just... It's such a wonderful world that we could have and share with one another throughout the entirety of the whole globe, you know, for all mankind. And so, you know, my mind never stops looking, it never stops thinking, it never stops learning, and it's just an amazing world. It's a world of wonders because there's so many things in this world that have been created by, you know, individuals out there with brilliant minds, talents, and gifts that... We could learn so much on a daily basis, and you know, you could go back into time and you could look at the things that were back in the early 1700s, or probably even way further than that, 1800s and 1900s, the toys that they had, the science, learning toys and tools, and just really neat things that they used to do. You know, I tried to do a contest here a while back called the Pop Pop Boat, and it was a little boat that somebody showed me one point in time that basically you put a little bit of water in the back of it, and then you put a little candle underneath there, and it has a little steam engine that makes the boat go, and it makes a little popping noise as you get the little water hammer effect inside the boiler. So it was a pretty nifty little toy, and I was thinking, you know, what we need to do is see if we can build a full-size version of this, because essentially what you would end up with then would be a solid-state boat motor with no moving parts. And using the proper materials, you wouldn't have to worry about poisoning the water or any kind of rust, so you'd have a boat motor that would essentially last forever and could run off of anything from solar power to, you know, burning wood or coal or something, you know, whatever. And it could be done efficiently. But it doesn't stop there. There are just so many different ideas out there. Yesterday I went out and I was doing a little shopping at some secondhand stores, some flea markets or thrift stores, whatever you call them, and wherever you're living. But I came across this nifty little, it's called a Humi air cooler, H-U-M-I air cooler. And it's a battery-operated little gizmo that runs off of two C-size batteries, essentially 3 volts of electricity. And I got to looking at this thing, and the price tag on it was only $1. So I said, well, you know, I have to check that out. And I opened up the face on it, I looked at it, you know, and I realized that this is a little miniature air conditioner. It works off of evaporative cooling. Essentially, you have a little tray at the top where you pour water in, and the water seeps down through these little holes that go down on these plates that have cloth attached to them. And so as the water is falling and evaporating, the little fan in the back will blow the cool air out. And I thought, well, you know, that would be a really good, interesting thing to put out there for people to check out, because it's something that could be scaled up and used in places that need air conditioning that can't necessarily afford to run something as powerful as your average air conditioner. So I think I'll try to do a YouTube video soon on this thing, because it's some really good information. And if you know of any toys out there that have some really good science and mechanics to it that could, you know, be scaled up or whatever, post a link over there in the chat room at shazizradio.com /superchat HTML, and you'll also have the advantage of being able to talk to the folks, wonderful folks over there off of Awake Radio. Awake Radio's in UK, Australia, United States. They're all over the place. Some wonderful souls over there. Also, the TCT Online, 1800. There's so many different networks out there, and I have this problem. I need to make a list out there so I can give everybody their due credit. But anyway, just some wonderful individuals coming together with some brilliant minds and loving hearts to help one another out. This little Humi air cooler could, if you look past just what's in the box, a toy, you know, and you think about the way that this thing is actually designed, it's running off of a little 3-volt fan, and as the water is going down the cloth inside the face of this and evaporating and blowing the cool air out there, this design could be used pretty much on any other scale. You could actually use a 12-volt fan motor and build you a larger system. You know, when I talked about how nature has the capability of heating your home and cooling your home, it's not beyond the realms of possibility that you could already tap into the energy that nature's already provided, such as if you live near a waterfall. You've got one of the most amazing air conditioners. I don't know if any of you have ever had the pleasure to stand next to a waterfall, but it's such a cool, refreshing experience, because the falling water itself, it's kind of got a cleansing effect. It's hard to explain unless you've actually experienced it yourself. It smells good next to a waterfall, feels good, it's cool. Actually, at some point, even in the hottest portion of summer, you can actually get cold standing next to one. But that's not the only method to cool your house. But if you do have the luxury of living anywhere near one of those waterfalls and you want to, you know, design an infrastructure, you could actually use that waterfall to cool all your neighbors' houses. You know, it's just a matter of using what you know about science and plumbing and ventilation and stuff. Heat rises and cold air falls, and you could literally pipe that cool air into town. You know, back in the Romans days, they took some time to build these huge aquifers that would basically transport water into the city, and they had the city set up so that the water would be continuously running. It's continuously being fed in, so it never had a chance to lay there and get stagnant or anything like that. And so, you know, they had fresh water in for the city. And so, you know, that just points out that necessity is the mother of invention. You know, there's a will, there's a way. There are solutions out there, and sometimes those solutions can come via little toys. I've seen a lot of nifty toys in my lifetime, and I always, you know, I'm the kind of guy, got to figure out how it works. It's just, I like the mechanics of everything. But in a situation such as the power outage, and you had just a little bit of a solar panel or maybe a little wind generator, and you couldn't generate enough energy to actually run your inefficient air conditioner as it stands, you could take and build a system like this right here, maybe even with an old refrigerator, kind of modify it to have a little waterfall inside there that trickles down on some cloth and blows a fan across the back and cools down. There's also a method, if you actually got the land to do it, you could actually bury a 6-foot or 30-foot covert pipe 6 feet under the ground. Oh, hold on a second here. How you doing there, Alan?
Hey,
we're live on air, brother.
Excellent. Now, the reason I called is because I was listening to what you were saying about your air cooler, you know, with the water.
Yeah.
And I used to have something, a full-size air cooler thing, and it had a rotating cloth at the back which would slowly rotate and then dip into some cold water that you had to put in the bottom. And then this cloth was then lifted up. It was probably about 2 feet high. And then there was a little fan that blew air and blew air through this thing. You got a fairly cool stream of air coming out of it. Now, it wasn't anything like air conditioning, but it would add that coolness to the air. I mean, the thing died a horrible death eventually. But it just made me remember that I used to have this thing, and it used to just sit there and blow cool air into the room.
Yeah, that's brilliant, you know, and even if it doesn't bring it down to what your actual air conditioner, you'd be surprised at what a few degrees in temperature difference would make on a hot day for, you know, somebody with a potential heat stroke or something like that, you know. So
now, I actually suffered from heat stroke back in the 1980s. I was on a concert tour, and we had been to Belgium and Switzerland and France and all these other places around Europe, and we stopped in Brussels before heading to the ferry to come home. And I decided that I was very tired after a night of libation the evening before. And I decided that it would be a good idea to just take a nap on the coach that we were on. Well, it was June, it's very warm, and I, for some reason, put a coat over myself as well. Well, I fell asleep on this coach next to the window in direct sunlight, and it was only the quick thinking of one of the other guys there that saved my life, effectively, because what they ended up doing was they stripped all my clothes off, and they were pouring water on my head, but none of it was reaching the ground. My body was that hot that it was just evaporating as it was it would sort of run down my head onto my shoulders, but then when it got to my torso, it was evaporating. So I stood completely dry while they were pouring water on my head. And the final thing they did was we had to continue the journey so that we could meet the ferry. So they carried on pouring water over me, and then when we got to the docks at Zeebrugge, it was at night, and there was now a gale blowing, and I stood out on a jetty at Zeebrugge in just my boxer shorts with this gale force wind cooling my body off because my temperature was still really, really high. So it's really, really easy to get heat stroke.
Well, brother, I'm so glad that those folks are around to take care of you. And you're right. You know, your body is only 98.6 degrees, and you start getting much past that. You know, that's the danger zone. People, they don't see it coming until it actually hits them, you know.
That's right. When I was in the military, when I was in the RAF, what would happen before the guys were sent out to the Middle East? They would go and do acclimatization on Cyprus, because obviously the climate's very close to what it is out there in Afghanistan and Iraq and stuff. But it's also got snow-capped mountains, so they could do the heat training in the lowlands and then go up the mountain and do winter training and stuff. But the acclimatization, they did all that in the lowlands and then flew into Afghanistan, but even then we were finding that people were turning up. These guys were turning up and they were totally unprepared for the heat that hit them as they got off the plane. And we had so many that were collapsing and that were needing rehydration, because we live in a temperate climate here in the UK and it doesn't normally get very hot. We're not very good at taking in liquids, and some of the guys were going to the Middle East and still continuing with their normal fluid intake as they would back home. So maybe, you know, 3 or 4 cups of tea during the day, maybe a bottle of juice or something, but your body just can't cope with that, with so little fluid going in, and it's got to have clear water, it's got to have clean water. And these guys were just, you know, totally knocked backwards, some of them coming into theatre and totally unprepared, some of them, because they'd have to come at short notice, a lot of them.
Well, speaking of preparation, there's actually a nifty little, it's like a scarf that goes around your neck that you dip in water, and it has this material inside there that kind of expands, you know, and you can tie it around your neck, and you dip it in some cold water, it'll expand, you tie it around your neck, and it actually keeps you cool. You know, most of your heat is lost up through your head, but, you know, your veins and everything, that kind of acts like a radiator there that circulates when your blood's circulating through that, through your neck with that cold thing around it. It's actually a brilliant little deal, and they weren't very expensive. I'll have to try to find a name and post a link out there for those things, but they work really well. I mean, we had some really super hot days out here one July, and I had that thing on, and I was just as cool as all get out, man, and everybody else was all sweating.
Now, there was a little gadget, some technology that I remember seeing. They were testing it on an American football team that was actually based in London, and what they were doing was they were taking two players that were basically physically the same, getting them to play the game, and they were getting all very hot and stuff while they were playing with all the gear on and everything, and then they would bring them back to the bench. One of them was just given like water or these isotonic drinks to take. The other one was given just a little bit of water, but then he had to put his hand into this technology, into this device, and what it did was it formed a vacuum seal around his hand, which so obviously they pump all the air out around his hand, so create this vacuum, and then in the center was a stainless steel container that had water in it, and because they created a vacuum that did something to the temperature of the water, and they were finding that the guy with his hand in this technology was recovering sort of 25% quicker than the other guy who was just sort of taking a seat and drinking. If his body temperature was coming down quicker, he was recovering quicker, he was able to perform better simply by sitting there for sort of 10 minutes with his hand in this thing.
Wow, that's brilliant.
Obviously drawing out all the heat from the because there's so much blood circulating through the hand. But I imagine it worked in the same way as the expanded neck scarf, you know, because it's able to draw so much heat from the blood that's passing around the neck. There's obviously big arteries there and stuff, so that's a really good way of getting rid of that excess heat.
Well, these are all kinds of ideas that are real world solutions that people should really pay close attention to, because we never know what nature's going to do. You know, nature does what nature does, and we're just kind of along for the ride. But either way, if you're along for the ride and somebody's got the window down and you're freezing, you need to know how to stay warm. Or cool,
right.
Vice versa.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I love hearing things like that. You know, if you ever come across any links to show the people the one that you were talking about where it kind of spins around slowly and dip the water like that, that's brilliant, because what I've tried to get across to people is these ideas right here. This came from a toy. All right, and if this thing can work on this scale, it could be actually scaled up, and it's so simple. The simplicity of what's in this toy, it's self-explanatory how this thing works. And so a person could build a larger one, pretty much out of things that you've already got around your house, you know. You could literally turn your shower into a evaporative cooling system, you know, by hanging some clotheslines or something across there. And, you know, worst case scenario, if you can keep water going to your shower, you know, you could put a fan up in behind there, you know, that would, or even in front of it for that matter, to suck the cool air and circulate it. So there are means by which you can keep cool even in the worst case scenario, you know.
Now I keep snakes. I've got six snakes. Now each one of them has a heat map, and it's literally just like some copper elements which are wrapped in this, you know, the plastic sleeves that you put stuff in, then you pump through a heat.
Yeah.
And it's, well, it's basically one of those with some heat elements inside it, inside the two plastic layers. And the biggest one I've got runs at about 15 watts. The others are sort of 7 watts. But I tell you, the heat that comes off these things is, I've got 4 vivariums sort of stacked together, and then the other two are in another part of the house. But the warmth just coming off those, and there's 4 there, one's 15 watts, and then there's 3 at 7 watts. So, you know, it's a simple little thing, but if you need some warmth, then, you know, solar panel, battery, inverter, 7, 14, 21, 21 watts, 36 watts, and there's some real warmth comes off them.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing.
Justin, he was trying to get in on the call too, but since you made the call, I couldn't add anybody. But he was talking about heat pads. You know, heat rises, so those heat pads, like you're talking about right there, you know, you'd be surprised. Even at the low wattage that you're talking about, would make or break the difference whether he's freezing or not. That's some brilliant stuff. And I was kind of thinking while you were talking about that, for an emergency solution, have you considered those little hand warmer deals that you kind of, whenever you go camping, you could actually, you open up and you shake them up or something like that, and it gets the chemicals going and actually puts off some heat, so that...
My grandfather had one of those. Had something like that. It was a metal case, and inside it were you put a little charcoal stick, which you had to light, and it was something he had in the army, and then that went in a sort of velvety cloth bag.
Yeah,
and
I'm familiar with those.
It went in your pocket. Yeah, but also
the ones I were talking about were chemical, though.
Yeah, right, okay, yeah, so you sort of mix the chemicals and you get the... Now, don't the military use something similar like that for heating food these days? Instead of having little stoves, you put a bit of water in a bag, and then you put the food pouch inside this bag.
Yeah, I think they actually got some things like
with
that.
Water and that. Yeah, he's the food of without flameless hot food.
And those things have, surprisingly enough, last quite a while.
Yeah. You could eat a couple of meals with them.
Yeah. So, you know, I was thinking, you know, for your snakes' benefit, you throw a couple of those little, you can buy them like little four packs that are just, you shake them up and then they activate and they stay warm. I mean, the snake's obviously not going to go lay directly on top of it. They'll get where they're in their comfort zone and hang out there, right. You know. So it's not going to hurt them or anything, and they can't get inside the bag or nothing, so there's no chance of them poisoning themselves or anything, but. It's just an idea that I wanted to throw out there because it came across my mind when you was telling me about, you know, the heat source that you use for them.
Yeah, so that's a good idea. Some of the local stores around here at the moment are selling a lot of camping gear because it's coming towards summertime. So, and they are selling these heat hand warmers, the plastic bags, and I think there's a little something that you maybe break a little thing inside or mix the chemicals somehow and great. It's amazing chemical reactions, you just get the heat and stuff.
Oh yeah. And you know, when you talked about the camp deal, that was a brilliant point because you would be surprised what you can find in the camping section. I mean, there's all kinds of nifty little survival gizmos that you normally take for granted, you know, waterproof matches. All right, well, they also got little waterproof containers for your waterproof matches where you can literally have them totally submerged and they'll still, you know, light up after they're, you know, after they've been underwater. So,
yeah, that's right.
You know, there's a lot of different things out there. It's all about paying attention to what you're looking at. You know, like I said, when I talk about clever toys with real-world solutions, when I look at a device or a toy, I don't just look at how it functions. I think about its alternative uses, what it could be done for. Now, this little toy right here could literally save somebody's life in a jam, you know? And if you ain't got no batteries, I mean, surely enough you could find some little solar panel deals out there in your yard that you usually use for lighting and borrow that solar panel out of there to keep that little fan going, you know?
Yeah,
it's as simple as that. And, you know, it's all from a toy. The pop-up that we talked about quite some time back, and I want to bring that one back to life again because I still are in the process of building a full-size pop-up boat that a man can ride around in. But
Excellent. That
one little toy right there could solve some serious issues around the world. There are countries out there that are third world countries that they call them. That, you know, they use old machinery that they can get a hold of, whatever they can get a hold of. And the problem is that when these boat motors break down, getting parts could be, like, nearly impossible because a lot of these boats are out of date. And so when they go to order these parts, you know, they either don't have them or you're looking at several months before you can get shipped into you. And the price of whatever it's going to cost to ship it in may be out of their range. However, using what we learned from the toy, the pop-pop boat, you could literally build a solid-state boat motor with no moving parts that would be made out of stainless steel so you wouldn't have to worry about it rusting, so it could never break down. And as far as your heat source, you know, you could burn sticks or candles for that matter, whatever. And what you've seen in the toy is what you'll see in reality. It works. You know?
Yeah.
And these little simple science that you can find in toys is just the beginning. It's the seed of the idea that could be expanded on to literally get it to get us to the point where we could take what we already know and live in harmony with nature. You know, the pop-pop book that I'm talking about, it's not going to harm nature unless you use something like copper and you get the thing extremely hot and create, can't remember what they call it, copper oxide or something like that. I can't remember what it was. It basically turns your water blue. People who make liquor in their stills have to worry about this because if the copper gets too hot, it'll poison the liquor. Yeah, and they don't want that. They don't want to kill off their customers. They won't make no money.
Exactly.
But, you know, that's the brilliance of something as simple as a toy. And if you go up and Google up vintage science toys, you'd be amazed at what kind of science these kids were checking out back in the day. They even had radioactive toys back in the day so that people could study radiation. But, you know, it shows you how to make rockets and... you know, there's the eco-science toys out there, all kinds of... You wouldn't believe how many things are in the science toys section. There's robotics and, you know, magnetisms, electric generators, and all kinds of stuff. And I'm always saying it, and I'm a firm believer, if it could be made on one scale, you could scale it up or scale it down. It's just, you know, a matter of doing it. What do you think?
Exactly. Tony, talking about scaling up, I remember building a little crystal radio with my grandfather when I was a boy. And we built this thing, and we had, you know, feet and feet and feet of wire, and I got this very faint, crackly little signal I was able to listen to stuff. And we built this thing out of junk, and but then... The manufacturers of the Steve Austin action figure produced this space kit, and it came with a backpack, and there was a crystal radio in the backpack.
Oh, wow, that is cool.
So you had your little action figure with his backpack on, and you put the earpiece in, and you could wander around with him, and he's got this long cable and everything. But then you scale up again, and people are running cables out around the houses, around the gardens, and picking up all kinds of stuff, all kinds of radio reception, with what power source?
Yeah,
the power that's in the air all around us.
If you understand the concepts of how crystal radio work, and knowing that it's on the AM spectrum out there, then you know how to make a transmitter and a receiver as well. Because you could literally build a transmitter that would transmit to your crystal radio, just like the regular radio systems. And it's something as simple as making, like, maybe if you want to do a telegraph style kind of deal, you know, a wireless telegraph. You got a battery pack and a little tap button, and when you tap, it sends out a magnetic wave out there, and somebody could pick the dots and dashes up on their crystal radio. It's, see how much you can learn just from something as simple as that?
Yeah, it's amazing. Now, I thought about you earlier today because I was watching some YouTube videos. I was watching some Kickstarter videos. And one of the bits of kit that somebody was trying to get money to produce was a magnetically levitated LED light bulb. And what they had was a wooden base. And when you tap the wooden base, the light came on. Well, that doesn't sound very special. But the bulb was separate, and it just hovers. It just floats over this wooden base.
Wow.
And you put it in the middle, and there's LEDs in there. And when you take the bulb, if you don't need the bulb, if you don't need light from the bulb, you can put a mobile phone on there, and it charges it wirelessly on that.
See, that's brilliant. And the magnetic toys that you're talking about, they really got some really nifty little levitation magnetic toys on there that you can, you can buy today that actually... float. It's pretty cool. So a little bit of simple science can take you a whole lot long ways. You know, I complain too much sometimes. I always say, you know, we should be so much so much further advanced than what we are today. But since the society won't catch up to where my brain thinks we should be, I'm just pointing out to everybody little simple ideas that could be beneficial in survival situations such as a toy. You know, who would ever thought that something as simple as a little air cooler toy could do something like that? And even on the scale that it is right now, I mean, you could still use that to set right in front of you, you know, to keep you cool or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, is it going to cool your whole
when
house?
I'm in my studio, when I'm doing my show in my studio, I have a small fan, and it's because it gets quite warm in the studio. But I've got a small fan, and it's powered by USB. It's there quietly blowing air on my face, and that is so. I mean, that it, just that by itself, no sort of extra cooling, but just the airflow over the body. You know, sitting in a still room is just not. You're just going to get hotter and hotter, but you get some airflow, whether it's by opening a door or window, or having a small USB fan or something. Just helps to regulate the body. It's so important to get to regulate things and keep things in balance.
Well, for you folks out there who are backyard inventors and such, here's a good one for you. You can literally do this and basically get you some old fish tank tubing and have your wife or whoever knows how to sew a big old coil system up inside of a t-shirt with an outer layer, you know, maybe to for looks look good or something, make it look like a tuxedo or whatever. And before you put that hose in there, take a little Dremel and drill a bunch of tiny holes in that thing and hook it up to a little air pump system that'll pump air through that hose, and you'd be surprised that you could actually probably put a little solar panel on the bill of your baseball hat that would charge that thing up and keep that little fan going. It doesn't take a whole lot to circulate cool air around your body. You know, if you take some advice from the way that the old spacesuits were designed, that's exactly how they did it. But they circulated water through those spacesuits, and as long as it's close to your skin, it acts like a radiator. It'll cool you down. But you could literally build a cheap shirt that would be so efficient, energy-wise, that would keep you cool. And heck, if you make $1 million off of it, great. I don't care. Just if it keeps you cool and keeps you happy, that's all I care about. But it's just an idea that comes from just basically observing things that nature's already taught us. You know, you talk about a little bitty fan. It don't take a whole lot to keep you cool, comfortable. Is it going to cool your whole house? Well, no, but, you know. You got to do with what you got to do with, and if you got a portable shirt that you could wear around that's doing the same thing, you've seen them hats with the little fan that tilts down, aims at you.
Yes.
Yeah, those little they run off a couple little pin light batteries. Some of them only take one little AAA battery, and they'll run for quite a while off of that AAA battery, and it just keeps a little bit of air cooling and. You know, the sweat off your forehead actually cools you down even more, so it can probably get to the point where you have to turn it off because you're starting to get cold. You know? Not every idea is a great idea, but every idea could be something that could be just a little bit of difference between life and death in a severe situation.
Yeah, that's right. It could just be the one little idea that makes another idea into something big.
Yeah, there you go. That's the point. It's a seed that could grow into a big idea. You know, if we use this earth efficiently, there's enough waterfalls on this earth to create enough evaporating cooling to basically cool down entire cities or the homes. There's enough thermal vents around there to heat all the water for all these homes. There's enough heat and electricity and coolness going on. See, nature's an awesome teacher. And, you know, all you got to do is pay attention.
Put a row of small turbines at the top of the waterfall for power generation, and then use the actual falling water for cooling and humidity and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and you can also take some advice from the Lord Kelvin generator, and as the water's falling, pick up a static charge and get even more energy. So
all that energy and all that power is just kind of rolling away, and we stand there and look at it and go, ooh, ah. Well, yeah. We could actually be getting so much more benefit from it.
I sit there and I tell people, if you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough for it. Somebody living out near where uranium is natural, there is free energy there for thousands, if not millions, of years. Because anytime uranium, anytime any radioactive material while it's deteriorating is releasing an energy wave. And it doesn't matter what form the energy wave in, it's all the same. You know, you've got a magnetic field that is creating a wave that you can use to tap into, you know, basically get electron flow. That's all we want, you know, for electricity, you know. So why not set up a series of coils around and bury them down in your dirt where you know this all this is at, and just let nature give you some electricity for your house. It's that simple. You know, we refine radioactive material to make it more radioactive. We get ludicrous over it. And then we turn around with that extremely radioactive material and then try to boil water with it. For Pete's sake, man. You're asking for a problem.
We're still living in the steam age.
Yeah. You're asking for a problem there, because, you know, you can only boil water so far before you got a problem. And if you're not dispersing that heat quickly, then, you know, you run the risk of a hydrogen explosion or something like that. There are so many ways in nature.
It's been 2 days, doesn't it?
Yeah. There's so many ways in nature to heat water that it's just crazy. I mean, solar heaters, water heaters, the thermal vents that we talked about. I mean, if you got a volcano in the neighborhood and you're crazy enough to live next to it anyway, then why not use it to heat and produce electricity for your house? You know?
Yeah, because I mean, the heat, air heating and ground heating, isn't there, where they run pipes so many feet down in the ground where the temperature is always constant.
Yeah.
And that picks up heat from down there.
Yeah, and what I was talking about earlier, you could take a 30-foot culvert pipe, bury it 6 feet into the ground, and it could be hotter than heck outside. And when that fan is blowing or sucking the air through that pipe underground, it stays a certain temperature down there underground, and you get cool air out the other side. In Sedalia, Missouri, there's an actual, I think they call it the Bosworth Castle or something like that. I can't remember the actual name. I'll have to look it up again. But either way, this guy built his castle, and it's a literal castle. He built it over the top of a cave back in the 1800s. And what happens is, he doesn't even have to have fans in a thing. When the wind blows against the side of the hill, it takes the cool air up out of that cave and goes all the way up to the very tip top of the castle, and then falls back down through shafts in the castle and cools the entire castle just like it would be for having AC or central air. And
fantastic.
He uses absolutely no electricity to do it. And the brilliant part about the whole deal is, during the wintertime, it's blatantly obvious that Missouri winters get kind of cold and you don't want that air. He did this really nifty trick to solve the issue of no cold air going through there. He put a lid on it. All right, so you shut the lid and it turns off. You know.
Fantastic.
So, you know, you can cool your house.
Sometimes low tech is better.
Yep. Sometimes it's just as easy just to go to the simple and save yourself all the headache of trying to be high tech, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There's a comment in the chat room. The use of mechanical devices to create movement used during the 18th and the 19th century in Japan to create movement in puppets use springs to store energy, but can be used in many applications. And that's true. There are a lot of different really nifty gravity devices that they use, just the weight of gravity. And as the weight is pulling down, it's turning the spring, which is locking a gear, which is releasing another one, which is allowing it to kind of tick-tock down and work its way slowly, so you get a longer run out of this deal. But in the process, it's actually got enough gear ratio going on to turn a little generator head. So even gravity can give you some electricity.
Didn't the Greeks and the Romans use fires and heat expansion to sort of open temple doors and stuff like that? I seem to remember seeing a diagram where they effectively had these automatic doors on their temples, but it was powered by, they would light a small fire under a sealed cauldron or something, and heat it, and the air expanding, so it's effectively pneumatics.
Yeah.
Would expand out of that and then open the doors for them. So.
Well, that's brilliant. They probably not only did that, but they learned how to get rid of big rocks real easy, too, by building a huge fire next to a boulder and getting that rock so hot and then dumping cold water on it and running like heck. Instead of one big rock, they had a bunch of little rocks.
That's right. And then it was just a case of gathering them all together again.
Yeah, making your wall with the little rocks that you just created.
Yeah.
See, that's the kind of thinking that I like, man. And there's a lot of stuff out there that people just throw away on a daily basis. You'd be surprised at the gold that you're throwing away. I mean, even literal gold is in circuitry, you know, if you want to take the time to get it off of there, and it's not like super substantial in one little deal, but it's kind of like throwing pennies in a jar. You do this over a period of time and, hey, make you a savings account or something with it. But between the capacitors and the copper wire and all the different things that's in there, little electric motors and magnets and stuff, you could find all kinds of goodies and junk that people throw away. And all of that could be, if you learn ahead of time, could be used in a worst case scenario to give you, at the very least, some lights in the fan. What do you think?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. Making small batteries to light LEDs from tin foil and salty water.
Yeah.
What was the other thing I've done? Taking a jar and putting a couple of forks in it and putting what was it I put in there? Was it vinegar or something? And I think I got some voltage out of that because I've got differing metals. And I did the earth battery test. Me and my son, who's home educated, we went out with some speaker wire and ran about 20 feet of speaker wire, and we got, what did we get out of it? I think we got about 2.5 volts or something.
Cool.
Out of this, from a copper pipe and I can't remember what the other metal was, but there was a copper pipe and then like a zinc or you know, iron or something. We got some voltage out of that, just out of the ground.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of people complain about how, well, you can't get enough current flow to run anything. That's because they're only thinking in one dimensional. They're not taking in consideration with that kind of voltage that you just talked about. You can get a transistor to kick. If you can get a transistor to kick, you can get a pulse going on. If you get that pulse going on, you can pulse a coil, which in turn could raise that voltage up and shoot across the spark gap into a capacitor bank. And once that capacitor is filled up, now you're playing with power.
Yeah.
So that's brilliant, man. I think we got Justin in here.
Okay.
Justin, you there? I thought I saw him in the chat. Tried to add him to the call, but maybe he ain't got his microphone on.
Yeah, he sent me a friend request and I've accepted it.
Cool. Well, anyway, can you think of any toys that you maybe have seen when you was a kid that could have been used for, some sort of purpose?
Meccano.
What's that?
The Meccano construction sets I had when I was a boy. They don't really make them as they used to anymore. And it was little steel plates, nuts and bolts, all different lengths, sizes, beams, axles.
Oh, I know what you're talking about over here. They called them Erector sets.
The Erector sets, yeah, it was Meccano here. If you could scale that up, and you could make some really substantial things out of that stuff.
Yeah, that's brilliant, because those little Erector sets, that's a really good one, because those Erector sets teach you about leverage and pulleys and stuff like that.
Exactly.
See, there's a lot of science in there. A lot of good science, and man.
But if you look back at the era when those things were really big, and when these other, when these, you know, like crystal radio sets and all that kind of stuff, where's that technology gone?
Well,
we've lost it, haven't we? We've forgotten about it. If I said to my 15, 16 year old son now, let's build a crystal radio set, he'd probably look at me like I've just grown horns or something. You know, what do you mean, listen to the radio without batteries? You're a nutter.
Yeah. Well, the whole thing is they don't even teach this kind of stuff in school. I mean, if you're going to teach a science, man, those would be the best things to take a go buy some scientific toys and take them into the school and let the kids check them out and explain to them how they mm-hmm. work, you know, because that's a life skill yeah. that, you know, could spark off the next good mad science guy that'll create something cool.
Most excellent.
So, you know, the Rector set, that's one good toy. The pop mm-hmm. boat, basically those little steam engines that they used to have whenever you was a kid. They actually, some people yeah. still mess around with those. There's
you can still buy them on eBay.
Yeah.
Still buy those things.
There's little Stirling engines, which work kind of like on the same method that you were talking about, how they used to open doors by heat expansion. And
I've got a Stirling engine. Once again, I got that for my son. Yeah. A bit of external combustion, air pressure, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and there's actual guys out there doing solar versions of it to where you don't even have mm-hmm. to have a fuel to it. They just basically use like something like a Fresnel lens and use that to heat up. But, man, there's so many different methods. That little Stirling engine, you could actually use Muddy's idea with the compost heap, you know, build you a tube yes. system to go up underneath that to heat.
Yes, I remember hearing him talking about that and thinking about when I was working on the allotment and the heat that comes off the compost heap.
Yeah. You
know, and it just sits there, and that heat could be used. And Muddy's right, you put a coil inside it, you get some real heat from it.
So we haven't even scratched the surface of all the ideas. What do you say
Lenz law as well?
Huh?
Lenz law?
Yeah. Yeah, there's some toys that have to do with that.
We'll take a break.
We say we take a quick music break and refresh our coffee, and then I'll see if I can rearrange this call where we can
okay, my friend.
Where we can drag Justin in there because he's chomping at the bit to get in.
Well, anyway, if you want to call me back, then
okay, we'll do that. I'll get that set up there, and then we'll get us a coffee okay. break, and everybody stay tuned. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table. Hope you're enjoying the show. Peace and love.
the Terrible. All rise for King Shazam the Terrible and the Knights of the Round Table.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table. Honorable Knight Alan on here, and Justin joined us in. So we're talking about today's show being about some clever toys with real-world solutions, and that one little deal goes into basically what we've been talking about all the time. The little ideas that you come up with, those are just the seeds to a lot bigger ideas, and I believe that we can do amazing things with things that you would normally consider to be just simple, you know, such as a toy. If you could build a solid-state boat motor with no moving parts that would never break down, all you had to do is feed a little heat into that thing to get it to go from point A to point B. You're not talking about a whole lot of technology there, but you're actually talking about getting something accomplished. So what do you guys think about something like that? Nobody? Don't everybody jump to the microphone at one time. I chip a tooth.
Go ahead, Justin. I've done a lot of talking already.
Well, when you went on break there, I was telling Alan my favorite toy is the old windmills that would cut pieces of wood, the little guy.
Oh, yeah, I know what
you're talking about. They were my favorite because my grandpa, he would make little tables, and then my great-grandma, she would make little figurines and stuff like that. But the guy would be doing all the work, the wind.
Yeah, they had a little...
He would just come along and replace the piece of wood and then take it and then glue it on to what he was doing.
Yeah, those are brilliant. They basically used a blade to turn a little rod that would move the guy's saw up and down. Yeah, I remember seeing a few things like that. That's a really good idea. I mean, heck, man, if you could use the wind to cut your 2x4s and stuff, I mean, sure beats that old saw that you had to have one guy on one end and one guy on the other, right?
Yeah, just.
Even an iron bar, really. You could put the iron bar in there, and the wind will continuously cut it.
Yeah. And using a little bit of knowledge that you can get from gear ratios and stuff like that, you can actually either speed it up or slow it down or even give it a little bit extra torque that it normally wouldn't have had. So there's some ideas in that realm. But, you know, if you look back in time at the toys that they used to have, they were toys that actually could teach you something. You know, and the science that they taught the kids in school, they was hands-on. They did a little bit of chemistry and things like that, and they learned real science. Nowadays, because governments or the people are so concerned about, you know, everybody wants to sue everybody and his brother for everything under the sun. So now they got to basically wrap some bubble wrap around the kid and, you know, walk them in there and, you know, set them down carefully so that they don't do anything, hurt nobody, you know. But you're taking and you're building a future generation of folks that don't know, you know. When you talk to your son about the crystal radio and he look at you like you're weird, you know, make a radio with no batteries. You know, hey, we're in a technical age right now. You know, we could go to Radio Shack. Well, you can't anymore in my area because they closed them down. But you can go there and you can buy cool electronics and all the batteries you need and all that kind of stuff. But what happens the day that that stops and you and I or Justin aren't around and it's just our kids, you know?
Mm.
What kind of knowledge do they got, you know?
Virtual knowledge.
Yeah, you can jump on YouTube and get some info.
Yeah, when they go to school now, they get an iPad and they do they dissect a virtual frog, whereas I got my fingers into its guts when I was a boy.
Phew.
You know?
Yeah.
Everything's got to have an app. Everything's got to be techie. Everything's got to be connected. It's the Internet of Things and... you know, I was talking about the Kickstarter video where with the floating light bulb. Well, one of the other videos that was on there was these little wireless tabs that you can stick on things and you touch it when you're there and it records that you've touched it. And then it can be like, you know, oh, have you taken your pills? Well, yes, I have, because I've touched the little tab. This Internet of Things is, everything's got to be connected. And it was just so, I went from one extreme, this really, really practical, forward-thinking device to, well, we're gonna stick little Bluetooth things on things, and your house will be covered with Bluetooth things, which you have to touch when you go in, and it just.
Do you know what's scary about that?
Some of it just seems so useless. Go on.
Do you know what's scary about that? And you hit a key point when you talked about some of the things appear to be so useless, but that one little useless point is probably the most dangerous point of all, because you will actually get a society that is so reliant on everything being done for them. Tell you when to take your pill, tell you when to blow your nose or whatever. And God forbid if something, a natural disaster happens, such as a mass coronal ejection from the sun shuts down the power grid, and you know, suddenly you don't know when to take your pill, you don't know when to blow your nose or whatever, you know. You see the kind of danger in that? Even in a...
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, yes, I can see the danger, to be honest.
Even in a modern-day society with all kinds of high-tech stuff, you still should know basics of all things, because if anything ever went awry... You know, would you know how to make a battery to try to send a signal out for SOS or somebody to help you out or something like that? Would you know anything like that? I actually have met some guys up in their 20 years old, 20 to even 30 range, that can't even change a tire on a car. You know, they drive a car everywhere under the sun. They got a little AAA sticker on there in case they break down. They get on the cell phone and they call somebody out.
That's right. Put gas in the back, and that's it, really.
Yeah, but what happens if if you can't get the message to the AAA, you know, to come and get you, and you're stranded out there on the side of the road in a heat wave or a blizzard or something? You know, sometimes.
See, the thing is, people will just sit themselves down and stand there and wait for somebody to come and do something.
Yeah, that's the problem. And I'm a kind of guy like, you know. The best one I can trust is myself. You know, I can trust myself. I can't count on whether or not my friend is going to be able to show up. You know, he might be liquored up at his house and can't go nowhere.
Exactly, yeah.
He'll say, "I'm sorry, brother, I can't drive. I'm just smashed, you know. Okay, well, I'm freezing out here. Can you call somebody who ain't smashed? I only got one quarter." Man.
You guys you're so right, Alan. Like, 2 weeks ago, I went to a family barbecue. Everybody's sitting outside. Nobody's throwing the football or the frisbee. Everybody's sitting there on their phones and their tablets.
Yeah.
Like, come on, you guys. Let's do something. What's the point of having the family dinner if you're all got something stuck in your face?
Yeah, I asked my kids one time how long did they think that they could go without their cell phones without getting violent. Oh, I could probably make it a day. You know,
it's not just the kids though, it is the adults. You see everybody driving around on their phone at Tim Hortons or coffee shop, on their phone, in the mall, everywhere, they're all on their phone.
But I wonder how many of those folks that are out there and searching the web are actually trying to do something to expand their knowledge for just such an emergency, man. That's the key.
And not many.
Yeah. And right now,
I would say people are awakening, and the majority is getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah, right now, the time to learn things is now. I mean, before an episode happens, you know, we're not doomsdayers. We don't sit around preaching, you know, hey, the end is near and all that kind of stuff, but we're not stupid either.
Mm-hmm.
If you go out and buy some auto insurance, you buy it for just such an emergency that maybe something might go wrong, hoping you never have to use it. But this knowledge that we're talking about isn't something like you could use it on a daily basis if you wanted to, just to see how far you could take one little idea, such as a pop-pop boat or a little miniature air cooler or something like that, you know?
That's right.
You could actually even turn it into, you know, a financial money-making deal.
That's right.
How you doing, Raymond?
Excellent. How are you guys doing?
Well, I know you got that air conditioner going. We want to hear Raymond.
Here you go.
So, have you been listening in any?
Yeah, but actually I've been real busy. I don't know what the heck happened, but things were crazy around here. I've been having to work my butt off. I mean, I've been working from 5 morning till 10, 11 o'clock at night, every day, 7 days a week for the past couple of months. Oh, how are you guys doing?
Oh, pretty good. We're talking about clever toys with real-world solutions and more.
I saw that. That's why I canceled a couple of meetings just so I could get in here and get on this file. What the heck you guys are talking about?
Well, it's good that you showed up, because one of the clever toys that Raymond been working with is the little bird that basically uses heat difference and makes the bird go up and down like he's drinking in the water. You want to tell him about that toy?
Yeah, it's not really a bust. It's just that I overfunk it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Got to keep it simple.
Yes, I made it 9 feet tall, and like the two-stage oscillator, which is a pendulum, if the longer you make the pendulum, the slower it seems to run, but the more power it has.
Yeah.
Well, the two-stage oscillator and the breaking bird are basically the same thing. They use an outside force, but they produce more power than the outside force they use. The 9-foot bird only operated about every maybe 1.5-2 minutes. But there again, I built it too simple. I didn't complicate it and get into it. In other words, I built it just like, I mean, almost identical to the little miniature thing that you buy the toy, in that it's got a ball at the top, a ball at the bottom, and blah, blah, blah. But it's really small, so it soaks in a lot of heat fast. I built exactly like it. Now, in building it, it was not a flaw in that it didn't work. It was a flaw in the concept of the way I built it.
Yeah.
I didn't even bother making a video of it, because I'm going to redesign the whole entire thing, build that, then I'm going to make a video of the first one showing the defects, and then showing the next one that I built, the corrections. And the corrections are that we're not building a drinking bird. We're building a heat engine.
Yeah.
Therefore, the head is not going to be a round ball. It's going to be the cooling coil of an air conditioner.
Oh, cool.
Okay.
Well, for those, before you get too far into it, for those individuals out there listening in that aren't familiar with the drinking bird toy, could you give them a little brief example of how that works?
How it works?
Yeah.
Simple. You have a round ball at the bottom. It has a liquid, that has a very, very low boiling temperature, and body of the bird, which is a long tube, goes down all the way to the inside the bottom ball and down close to the bottom. Therefore, when the liquid boils, it builds a pressure, pushes down on the liquid, and forces the liquid up the tube of the body of the bird toward the head, never ever reaching the head. Because once it gets to a certain point of balance, the top above the balance point becomes heavy, and it tips over and dips down into a glass of water, wetting the head, which is covered with felt. And then, of course, doing so, the bottom ball, it comes up in the air, and the body, the tube, comes out of the liquid runs back down into the body, giving it more weight, and it slams down and starts rocking back and forth. Well, the water on the felt in the head cools the gases that were heated that are now in that were in the bottom are now in the top, and it cools them. As they cool, they shrink, creating more pressure at the bottom and pushing down, and it just rocks back and forth, back and forth. And it, all it is a heat engine.
Yeah.
Warm at the bottom. In reality, you don't even need water. If you were to cover the top of the head with tin foil or aluminum foil, leave the shiny side out and put it out in the sunlight, then it would still work. I've seen this done. I haven't actually done it myself, but I have actually seen it done. Somebody else did it, and it works great. It's a heat engine. You cool the top, you heat the bottom, and it works. Therefore, with my new room, they're going to build the more correction one. We're going to drill holes and put pipe inside the bottom so that air and heat can go through more rapidly. We're going to use a air conditioning cooling coil for the head to cool faster. And we're going to wrap that with a something similar to a hardware cloth, like a chicken wire or something like that, and then put felt around it so that the felt will get wet and it will cause cool air. It will keep the sunlight or heat away from the head, which will be the radiator, the air conditioning coil, and it'll cool faster. The bottom, we're going to drill holes in it and put pipe through, real small pipe, half inch, three quarter inch diameter pipe, a lot of them, so that the liquid will heat up faster. And it should work a lot better. And we're not going to make it quite 9 foot tall. We're thinking about making it like 4 or 5 feet, but with a bigger body and a bigger head, and balance it all out to where it'll work. When it does work, it'll rot faster. Add more weight.
That's brilliant. And all that was inspired from a simple little toy that had a little bit of basic science going on in there.
Exactly. It's a heat engine. We've discussed heat engines before. It's not how much heat you put into it.
That's brilliant.
How fast can you get the heat out that you put in?
I want to read out a comment that's in the chat room. Stephen Gibbons said he used to make elastic band cars with lollipop sticks and cardboard wheels when he was a kid. And, you know, he says in there... Where'd it go? There it is. And not sure what practical application I would have in the real world, but you'd be surprised at the things that you could learn from something as simple as even just a rubber band toy, you know? I mean, look at the way that clocks work. You spring forward, it locks a gear, tightens up this section, and then releases something else in the deal. It reminds me of that old game Mousetrap. You remember that game?
Yes, I do.
And that was a brilliant game, and it's also a brilliant way to explain on how nature sends out energy all the time that you can tap into. And so maybe it looks like a mousetrap, and you have to have one guy that goes around and puts the ball back in the deal and gets it cycled, so he's got a job, and his only job is to, when the ball finally makes it to the bottom, he takes and sets it back up to the top. Or do you use this drinking bird idea that you got to pick that ball up and drop it back up into the top, and now it's going back down again? You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
So... using something as simple as that game Mousetrap as an example, you can see that nature already provides wind, solar, heat, cooling, and all you have to do is be able to tap into it. Let nature do what nature does and just use the energy as it's flowing by. You know, when you get into a river, I use this example all the time. You got a canoe, you get into a river, you're flowing downstream. You haven't changed nothing in that river. All you done is just jump along and go along for the ride. So you're working in harmony with nature. You're not harming nature. You're just kind of riding along with it. And these little toys like that, basically somebody in history had seen what nature was doing and kind of said, like, you know, hey, I can do something with that. There's a practical application. So yeah, Stephen, even in that little rubber band car, you could learn a few things on that deal to find some real world solutions. So that's brilliant. So what else you got there, Raymond?
Well, I've been recently trying to make fuel alcohol. And I'm doing it using donuts from the Dale Donuts at the donut shop store away. Actually, I punched the word donut into my GPS. There's 45 donut shops within 10 miles of my house.
Wow.
Now, a few years back, I did a little collection of them because the winter was really cold, and I went around to the donut shop getting the day-old donuts out of the dumpster and threw them in the woods behind my house for the wild animals because they're full of calories, and animals keep warm by having many, many calories in their body. They burn the calories to stay warm in the winter. And I would do it as a deal, just a thing to help out. But anyway, I found out that the average donut shop throws away roughly 150 to 200 pounds of donuts every week.
Oh, wow.
Now, you take 200 times 45, that's 9,000 pounds of donuts. Now, they are starch. They're a little tiny bit of sugar, but they're starch.
Well, you know, Raymond, there is a opportunity in there for you for the backyard inventor's portion of yourself. Instead of them throwing their donuts in the dumpster, create a little machine that will throw it into like a little homemade steel kind of machine that will produce some fuel that would run a generator that would supplement their electricity bill.
Exactly what we've done. The donuts, we put them in a pot. We took a paint mixer that, I call it a mud mixer because we do a lot of drywall work. And we just put it in a 5-gallon bucket, about 15 pounds of donuts, 12 to 15 pounds of donuts in a 5-gallon bucket. Fill it with about 3.5-4 gallons of water. Mix it all up, cut it up until it just comes up a mush. Then we put it in a pot and cook it. And we found that if we cook it in a pot, that it burns on the bottom. So what we did, we took a pot that a 5-gallon bucket will fit in, and then we put water in it, and we put a standoff at the bottom to keep it from burning. Therefore, it's the same thing as double boiler. We heat it up to about 180, 190 degrees, and stir it occasionally for an hour, hour and 15 minutes, and all the starch we cook all the starch out of the donuts. Then we strain that, and we cool it down to about 35 to 140 degrees. We throw in the amylase enzyme, which turns the starch to sugar. Then we cool that down to about 90 to 95 degrees, and we throw in I can't even think of the name of it, but it's a food type stuff. And then we put in the champagne yeast. Now, the reason we use champagne yeast is the normal brewer's yeast, alcohol content of 10 to 11% will kill the yeast. Champagne yeast will go up to 18 or 19% alcohol. Anyway, the yeast grows and turns the sugar into alcohol. Now, here is the interesting thing. The part that I just came across is it gives off carbon dioxide, but the carbon dioxide will build a pressure, extreme pressure. It will break a glass bottle.
Yeah, I knew that from back in making wine, that I actually had grape juice all over my ceiling one time because of that pressure buildup you're talking about.
Right. Now, the thing is, that pressure is carbon dioxide. So, if you use that pressure and run it over, in other words, they put normal people that ferment stuff to make alcohol, put a bubbler in it to keep oxygen out, so that the carbon dioxide builds the pressure, blows the water up, and then the water comes back down. But anyway, if you take that pressure and put it over into another bucket that's sealed full of water, now you drill two holes in the lid of the bucket. You take the fermenting carbon dioxide and you run it just into the top of the bucket. You have another hole with a pipe going all the way to the bottom of the bucket, and then that pipe goes up 20, 30 feet in the air to another bucket. Now, as you're making your fuel alcohol or drinking alcohol, either one, it builds pressure. The pressure builds up on the second bucket, pushes the liquid down like the drinking bird, pushes the liquid down until it goes up the pipe and into the bucket above. When the bucket above gets full, it comes down, pulling on a rope and a pulley, turning a turbine, making electricity. Duh.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. There's also one other possible application using the Venturi effect. If you had a like a wide pipe going up there, as that CO2 was rising up under pressure, that it would suck some water up a tube and fill up a bucket up there and use that for like a gravity to pull a deal down for another generator.
Yes, sir. The thing is, when the full bucket's down, it comes down to the bottom. Now, when it comes down, the empty bucket that was at the bottom is now up. But when the full bucket comes down, it has weight. So it pushes a lever and swaps valves.
That doesn't all this sound like the game Mousetrap?
Yes. That's what I'm trying to make.
All this brilliance came from something as simple as a scientific toy, and that's what I love, man. They used to have all kinds of cool, and a little submarine that you put baking soda in, and every so often it would go underwater, and then it'd pop back up, and then go underwater, and it was really cool, man.
Wait a minute. Now, here's the real kicker. The empty bucket is now being pulled up, has a lot of pressure in it. So when it pulls up and the heavy bucket comes down, it's full of water, it not only swaps valves, but it opens the pressured empty bucket that is full of pressurized carbon dioxide, which the pressurized carbon dioxide goes over and squirts into water. It blows bubbles into water that has algae in it.
Now, I'll put you one better than that in there as well, because on the way up, of the cable that you use to raise and lower the bucket is connected to a pulley system that is turning the fan blade at the same time, so you're staying cool while you're watching the gizmo create the algae.
If you take the energy to turn the fan, you can't use it to turn the turbine to make electricity. But your point is correct. That is energy that can be used to do whatever you want. Turn a fan, run a motor, not run a motor, it is a motor. Turn a generator, it can do anything, whatever you want it to do. I mean, you know, we're talking about using the same energy over and over and over and over again. You cannot destroy energy. You
yep.
can change its size, shape, form, and or direction.
Well, hook your fan blade to the doggone pulley itself, so that as the pulley's turning anyway, you're turning the fan blade. It's not going to like have super RPMs, but it is pushing air around.
Yeah, guess what? Now, when you put these donuts down and making or cooking the starch out of them, you're also cooking the grease. So when you take 12 to 15 pounds of donuts and you cook them down, when you cool them, the grease floats to the top, and out of 12 to 15 pounds you're going to get about a pint of grease. We're talking lard here, folks. We're talking stuff that will burn. I mean, YouTube is full of people making emergency candles using lard.
Yeah.
Vegetable oil. The stuff burns. So therefore, if you do it right, then you're not using any outside energy to distill or cook your donuts.
And in part of your process in your mousetrap right there, you could have a skimmer that shoves the grease off the top into another container that could then in turn be heated up and melted down into another container, which you could use it for biofuel.
Exactly. I mean 99% of all farm equipment in China since the end of World War II has run on vegetable oil or animal fat. They do not use diesel fuel because they don't have any.
Well, Muddy's up in here too. If he's got his microphone going, why don't you guys take over for a second, because I got to sneak up out of here for a minute. Muddy?
Good morning, darn it.
There you are.
Oh, yeah. I was just looking up to find out how many calories are in a donut, because that's your units of heat and energy.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Original glazed donut, calorie king.
Yeah.
I just ate me two honey buns. That ought to do it. I remember an article where it talked about how many calories you'd burn per mile on a 10-speed, how many calories an SUV like a Humvee uses per mile, and how many donuts you'd have to eat to make 1 mile. And that's what I was kind of looking at there.
Oh, right.
Calories. One donut 300K calories.
How much did that compute into watts?
I don't know.
Well, it's so many calories per watt or so many watts per calorie.
That's what I was looking for. I was looking for one. I was looking for that other article and everything. It told you how many calories were in how much gasoline it took to make the same amount of calories as a donut.
Right.
All that stuff, so you can compare. I don't quite see it. The cake type donut has less calories. Not bad. 192. Imagine that.
Really?
That's what it said on the bottom of this one. Calories, 192. Calories for fat, 93.
And calories per donut is 300? What?
About that.
It's got to be called donuts have a lot more grease.
The other one, them regular donuts that you eat now, is doggone, are 300K.
Wow.
That's a lot of calories.
No.
Original glazed donut, 190. That's not bad. What donut are they talking about here? Dunkin' Donuts. Ah. Yeah, stay away from Dunkin' Donuts. In other words, if you went by Dunkin' Donuts and got their used deals, you'd probably make more alcohol.
Possible, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the fascinating thing is, I've been to donut shop, so I've built a lot of them.
Okay, I'm back. Hey, speaking of donuts, there's another toy out there I was just thinking about because you guys were talking about donuts. Is anybody familiar with the Easy Bake Oven?
Oh, yeah. I actually have one.
Well, a lot of folks think a toy is just a toy, but you can actually cook in those things.
Yeah.
And essentially what it is a light bulb. You know, it's a little box that has a light bulb in there. They got these nifty little trays, pans that you put in there with a little cake mix. And you can bake a cake in the doggone thing. Well,
we had we were doing drywall and metal stud framing for AT&T in Virginia Beach. And, man, I mean, there's like a 4-foot by 12-foot, like, soffit and window. That basically they had to run a bunch of cables over and everything like that. Man, it was pretty much all header for about 3 or 4 foot down in the studs and all that other stuff. But while doing that job and putting up two layers of drywall, the green board, we were working our butts off and everything, and we got the idea of making out what they call a hot box, which is just nothing but an overgrown Easy Bake Oven. We've got that 2-inch foam board that you cut and stick in between the studs for insulation rather than regular insulation. And there are several sheets left over, man. We cut one in half and we took that thing home, made a couple other cuts where it fit in my car. I came back the next day with a doggone hot box already made with aluminum foil on the inside. And I sunk the screws with a bunch of liquid nails, and we put that sucker together and put a 75 watt and a 50 watt bulb in there. It bowed the lid on the top, so I unscrewed the 75 watt bulb until it went out and just left the 50 watt bulb. From break time, which was about 9 to 9:15, up till 12 o'clock, man, they cooked a lot of stuff. The next day, this one guy, who wasn't even a drywall mechanic, but he claimed to be, and he brought steak. So we decided we'd keep him, because he brought steak every day, fat steak, and he'd share. And I tell you what, 9:15 up to 12 o'clock was enough to make a awesome steak.
Bunch of grown men sitting around cooking steaks in a homemade Easy Bake Oven. How clever is that?
We had little wire racks in that thing. We had little wire racks where everybody's, we cooked everybody's.
Well, you know the brilliance of that. You guys are familiar with halogen bulbs, right?
Yeah. Heaters and everything, bro. Those, I mean, you can cook the snot out of some food, bub.
Yeah, 12 volt halogen bulbs.
50-watt bulb. You can get a 50-watt solar panel and a 12-volt 50-watt bulb, and there's your solar oven.
Yeah. The 12-volt halogen bulbs, you don't want to put your finger on them after they've been lit up, because those things are blistering hot.
You literally put a blister
on your finger.
Your 50-watt bulb has got a lot of surface area, but you get them halogen, man, that's like taking a magnifying glass. You're taking this big area down to this little area.
Yeah.
Keeping the wattage. So, yeah.
In the foam board, that keeps all the heat in.
I got a challenge for you guys over there. I want you to take and make a battery-operated halogen bulb easy bake oven. Do a video.
You just got a killer idea. I'm going to make a solar-powered drinking bird.
Cool.
We're going to put that halogen bulb inside the body of the bird for the heat. Then we're going to insulate the outside so the heat stays there. But then when it tilts over, that heat has to go up to the head.
Yeah.
Oh, man, this is going to be great. I've got a little 15-watt solar panel. Puts out about 22 volts. Oh, man, this is going to be great.
That's excitement, isn't it?
That is. Hey, listen to this, guys. This all came from some toys. So we may be all grown men, but we still remember the toys, man. The director sets and things we used to build with those things, and the science behind these toys that you could learn. I mean, it's something that...
In the UK, they call it Meccano.
That's right.
That's right.
Meccano. Moody, from By Gosh, Texas. I found an energy converter calculator online. So you were talking about 3,000 calories, weren't you? 3K.
Right. No, 300,000.
Oh, 300,000.
That's what it says.
So that's,
but these other ones are right around 200 and 300 calories, yeah.
Right, so 300,000 calories would be 348.9 kilowatt hours.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, are you kidding?
That's cool.
What about 300 calories?
300 calories.
How many horsepower
is 300 calories? 300 calories is 0.3489 kilowatt hours.
0.3? A third of a horsepower?
Yeah.
No.
That's like 250 watts.
No. 0.03.
Yeah, a third of a watt.
Well, 0.3448 it says.
Right. I mean, yeah, that's a third of a horsepower. One horsepower is 749 watts.
Well, you know what?
So
I'm
one
hearing,
third that, right around 200 and something. So yeah.
I'm hearing free energy talk here. You guys got to watch out. The men in black gonna come up and take your donuts away from you.
I just had these 600, so I think I've got two-thirds of a horsepower in me right now.
Well, yeah, go out there and mow the grass with that horsepower.
We were running around looking, man. There's still water. I couldn't get to the zero turn across it without getting stuck. It's got to be one more day.
Yep.
There's a lot of grass to mow.
Well, and, you know, therein lies another where one person sees an aggravation, I see an advantage. I mean, you know, there's a whole lot of power in that water that's laying out there in your ground. I mean, hey, a little bit of electrolysis, and you turn a bunch of hydrogen into some fuel source there, you know. So you got rain pouring energy down on you. You got wind blowing energy in your face. You got the sun blowing energy. The dirt's going to give you some energy. You got hydroelectrics, thermoelectrics. If you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough for it. It's as simple as finding something like a toy. You know, I talk about a toy that I paid $1 for. I don't know what that is in your guys' neighborhood, but a dollar to me is not that much, you know. But this one little toy actually sparked off some brilliance, because you could sit here and use this little toy to cool yourself off in just your little general vicinity, or you could expand on this idea and make a larger one and cool your house down with it. And even if it's only just a slight temperature change that keeps you from overheating and getting a heat stroke, at least it's some comfort as opposed to no comfort, and you're not talking about very much voltage to actually run it. And using a few things that you learn from nature, you could get nature to do the job for you, you know?
Yep.
So, there you go, man. That's all from toys.
There's no such thing as free, as non-free energy. Everybody, all these naysayers are saying, there's no such thing as free.
Well, they're all stuck in the whole over unity and zero point world. All I'm doing is I'm not trying to defy the laws of physics, even though I don't necessarily agree with all the laws of physics, and sometimes that gets me in trouble because, you know, I'm just a man that says what I say, and that's that. But, you know, I'm saying I'm watching nature do some amazing things. Nature can come along and blow your house down like the big bad wolf. And so, well, if nature's going to do that anyway, why not put some sort of system up to where when nature's blowing a couple hundred mile an hour wind out there, you're using that energy to store up in a huge bank. And you didn't stop the storm, but you benefited from it because after the storm goes away, you still got lights.
I have to say, thank God that nature's free energy passed me by. We had a tornado come over our house Monday night.
Well, we're blessed that you're safe, brother.
Oh, yeah. It kind of went up the hill and just didn't touch us.
Yo, Shazin, I like what you said just a minute ago. Don't curse or put down Mother Nature. Use her. You know, when I was married to my first wife, she had three kids, and they were little, and a thunderstorm would come over, and it would be lightning and crashing and banging and booming, and oh God, the wife, she'd be out in the bedroom crawling under the bed with the kids, and I would grab the kids by the legs and drag them out from underneath the bed and take them out on the front porch with me and tell them how great and powerful and beautiful lightning and thunder was. We lived in the country, and across the street the guy that had land over there had 450 acres of corn, and it would be like 2 or 3 weeks with no rain, and all of a sudden the thunder and lightning would come at night, and oh man, the rain would be falling down, and I'd be telling the kids how beautiful it was, and it was God's way of making food for plants. One small bolt of lightning produces 20 tons of nitrogen, which is food for plants.
Wow.
In the beginning, we would grab plastic, run out, and go in the middle of the cornfield and sit down. Of course, we put plastic down so we wouldn't be set in the mud, and just be real quiet, and you could actually hear the corn grow. I mean, cracking and popping, and as it would expand and grow and grow and grow, it was beautiful. And my kids grew up because of the loving thunderstorm. Hey, respecting it because it can't hurt you.
Yeah. Well,
it is a beautiful thing. Everything around you turns green like you would not believe after a thunderstorm. Rain, okay, it turns a little green. But a thunderstorm, it gets three times greener twice as fast.
And there's so much potential energy in a thunderstorm that could be stored and just used, you know. Hey, it's amazing how nature can either take away your power or give you power at the same time.
You know, like in the state of Florida, there may be 2 or 3 days, 24-hour periods in a year that you do not have a thunderstorm. It has been estimated by scientists that know more about this than I do, that in one 24-hour period, in the state of Florida alone, there is enough electricity produced and released into the atmosphere to power the world for 10 years.
Well, there you go, man. You know, and it's necessity is the mother of invention. There's a little toy that people don't even probably even necessarily consider a toy. There's these nifty little tennis shoes that the kids have that have little LEDs, and when the kids walk in, the little lights will light up in the shoe. Well, that's a pretty amazing little deal when you think about it, because, you know, if kids are out playing at night, you can see their little shoes lighting up, and you're more apt to see them and not run over them with a car or whatever. And so it's like a safety device, and the kids love it because, you know, it's cool. Their shoes are lighting up. But inside that deal is such a simple little concept. I believe, I've never seen the inside of them, so I'm just guesstimating how they actually function. But my belief is they use a piezoelectric and a capacitor, because you don't never have a place to change batteries in them. They don't never seem to go bad. So as the little kid's stepping down, the pressure bends the piezoelectric portion of it, which sends a little bit of juice into a capacitor, and then lights up an LED. So it's a really super simple system, but a lot of science in something that simple. What could you do with that? I mean, you talk about the storms out there and the rain that they get. When raindrops are falling, there's a guy out there on YouTube that did a video that made a panel of a bunch of piezoelectric crystals on a piece of plywood, and as the rain was beating down on the deal, it was charging up a capacitor bank. There you go, man.
I want to see that, Shazaz. Send me a link to that YouTube site.
I'll have to see if I can find it. It's been quite some time since I saw that one, but I'll have to Google it up, piezoelectric generator. Falling rain. And then, now everybody should have a gutter on their house for just such an emergency that the rain, because the gutter guides the water away from your house foundation and the walls. So why couldn't you put little turbines inside the doggone gutter itself? I mean, if the water's going through there anyway, might as well charge your batteries with it.
Yes, exactly. There's so much free energy out there, people have no idea. I mean, it's all around you. It surrounds your body, it surrounds your being, it surrounds the world, your life, the universe. It is free energy. It's only the machine to convert it that costs money.
Well, and all you need to run a fan is 10 kids in your house, because they're continuously flagging the door.
Yeah.
So while they're flagging the door, they're waving the air at you, and hook a generator to the door, and every time they open and close the door, it turns a lever that charges up the doggone batteries.
Help run the air conditioner.
Yeah, take a turn of bad situation. Hey, kids, run in and out all you want. It's cool.
You kids, open that door.
And you know, there's all kinds of kids that just love to jump up and down on the bed, so you might as well, they're going to do it whether you like it or not anyway, and you could always know when they're jumping up and down on the bed, because you can put some piezoelectrics underneath the mattress, and as they're jumping up and down on the bed, you can see the lights going off in the other room, see?
Yeah. Okay. I love it.
Kid power.
Here's what you do. You take the kids... And you build this little deal there where they get this rope that they can hang on to with a knot. And they run up this little stairway up to the top. They grab the knot and they go down. The next kid's up there. He's waiting his turn. And he goes down. Then they run up the thing. You just feed them sugar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Donuts.
Right.
And, you know, hey, the kids love the swing set outside. You got a kid out there, and he's swinging all day long. Hey, hook a generator up to the kid's swing. He ain't going to slow him down or anything. He'll have fun out there. He won't even know he's charging your batteries for you. You can get your cordless drill charged up when the kids go out to play.
Hey, the swing is nothing more than a two-stage oscillator.
Yeah.
It's a flat pendulum. Lord have mercy.
Use that swinging motion to pulse the spark gap, you know? Pulse of cool.
Taylor Sherry, he had the niece and nephew down, or one of the relatives, two of the relative kids, and he was doing his radio show. Doggone, man, it was beautiful. Hearing those little voices, and you hear the wheels turning in your head and stuff. And, oh, man, they were loaded with energy. Big energy.
Hey, you know what? You could also you could also get Granny involved. You know, Granny gonna sit there knitting in a rocker and rocking back and forth, and you could put a little bitty switch underneath your rocking chair, and every time she rocks back and forth, charging up your batteries for your flashlight. What do you think?
No, don't take any energy away from Granny.
No, I ain't gonna take no energy. She's got the it's like he was talking about with the leverage, you know. Granny wouldn't even notice that the light was flicking on and off, you know, charging her battery.
You seen that video Ryan Abrams put out there from Abrams Lab Tesla Art?
Yeah, the little motor out of the microwave that he made a flashlight?
Yeah, the little permanent magnet motor for the rotisserie. Yep, yeah. and the capacitor from there, and then a couple diodes for a bridge rectifier, and the light, and that was it.
And it lasted quite a while when all you had to do is turn it about, I think you said like 7 or 8 times or something like that.
Oh, no, it wasn't that much. It was like he turned it a half turn and turned it back a half a turn, and it was at half brightness. He gave it another half turn, and it was at full brightness.
Yeah, but it stayed on for a while.
Oh, yeah, for quite a bit. A whole lot better than going, yee, 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 and then look at something, you read a paragraph, and then you have to go crank it again. Man, that thing was more efficient than what they got on the market. It was awesome.
Well, why couldn't you hook that to Granny?
If it's 7 full revolutions, I'm sure that thing would keep on going for hours.
Why couldn't you hook that to Granny's rocking chair so that you could have a light up there so she can see the knit in the dark?
Because the caster can only take so much voltage, and then it's like a bomb. I don't want to do that to Granny.
Well, you're going to dump that energy up in a bigger bank.
Saying, oh, look, the birds are singing, the bunny rabbits are hopping, and the froggies are doing hands. Bang!
Oh, if you're going to make that much energy, then you need to just ship it over so you can run your TV while Granny's rocking. Now, Grandpa can watch the news on his little TV while Granny can see the knit.
Well, he used a whole lot more than 20 milliwatts. But the thing is, the voltage on the capacitor was going up there because you crank them things by hand. You get up to 400 watts out of them. I proved it to Rick, the appliance guy. When I gave him a bunch of microwaves to scrap, I said, I want the MOT, the microwave oven transformers. I want the magnetron, and I want that I want those two rotisserie motors out of there. You get that, then you can scrap them. You can have them. I'll just call it exchange work. He came back with nothing but the magnetrons. He says, well, what are you gonna do with those? I said, it ain't it. I said, I made you a deal. I said, this is, you know, I said, you give me these and you can have the rest. And he said, well, you can't do nothing with all that. I said, oh, yeah. He says, what about this? He said, what do you think about this little rotisserie motor? What do you think it'll do? He says, oh, I don't do nothing. I said, it's a generator, man. Here, hold these wires. Let me show you. And I gave that thing a... And well, he jumped. I had my revenge for losing all that.
I love it.
All I got was the magnetrons. I could have had 7 MOTs, man.
Well, those little deals that you're talking about, those little rotisserie deals, you know, those little kids that got little pedal cars and stuff like that, tricycles, I mean, those would be perfect little generators for lights on their little bicycles and stuff, you know?
Oh, but they're hard to turn because they're geared up.
Yeah, but you're talking to the whole big difference because, you know, the size of that wheel and the pedal.
Grab the lever and pull it back once or push it up once and then just go on for another 10 minutes.
If you're pedaling a bicycle anyway, then it's not going to hurt you to... You're not even going to notice that doggone thing. If you can turn it by hand, you can turn it with your legs. That's blatantly obvious.
Hey, Bucky, put your tongue on these wires. You know they'll be playing with that.
Well, I want to see the little mad science kid with his tricycle or big wheel that has like a big old giant arc spark gaps or cattle prods hanging out the side, and as he's pedaling, he's driving by zapping everybody.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Tongue on these wires, you can speak Korean.
Got it.
I've been tired. Tongue on
hey, you remember that video where I was licking that damn flashlight? Oh, excuse my French. Licking
oh,
the
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we were talking about that last week, weren't we?
Yeah. I guarantee you, buddy, you wouldn't lick the fly swatter I built. I put like four extra 500 volt capacitors on mine. It turns bugs to dust.
It'll
put pits in your tongue. Then you can just sit there and take one of those little nose rings and use it in your tongue.
This is going to make your eye crooked.
It already is.
Well, just straighten it out then. But anyway, you know, there's all kinds of toys out there with all kinds of science. Look at where we've taken this. I mean, we talked about something as simple as evaporative cooling in a little toy that I bought at a flea market for $1. And we've expanded all the way up to the drinking bird that could be built up, the pop boat that could be built up. We've also talked about a few other toys that I can't remember because it's been a long conversation, but it's been a brilliant one. I mean, there are so many different really cool toys from the old days and even modern days that people just basically overlook. Oh, well, that's neat, you know. Have you seen those little solar dancing dolls that they have that you put up in the window, and those things will run even on regular just light off your light bulb?
I haven't seen those yet.
Oh, yeah, those things are incredible. They'll sit there and dance back and forth all day long. They got, like, little ducks and little hula dancers and bears and all kinds of ones, you know. But they're, like, so super efficient. They have a little electric motor inside this thing that it's just a simple motor, but that idea could be expanded on. I mean, if you're actually getting motion to cause this little plastic toy to dance back and forth, and you think past one-dimensional all the way up to a more advanced, larger device, then you got a solar-powered motor going on there.
You know, what makes it go is that do they run it through a high-voltage multiplier and use the static? Because I saw these little birds and pterodactyls and stuff like that that are made of like lightweight foam, and the static makes their wings flap and stuff.
You know, these are more like on the concept of sort of like what the shake up flashlight would be doing. Probably have a little circuit board that has a little capacitor and some rechargeable batteries in there, and whenever the sunlight hits it, it charges that up, and it's got a little bitty tiny electric motor that pushes up and down a shaft that makes the thing rock back and forth. And I mean,
oh well, you got them little dancing flowers that you said.
Yeah, that's like what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that's very low wattage. It's the lack of friction in the bearing, and everything's balanced.
But
that's
either way,
cool. That's the way these other things were.
Either way, don't think about it on a small scale. Visualize it on a larger scale. What could you do with that?
I want to comment on what you're talking about right now, and you said almost the same thing about 2 minutes ago, and that is, it's a little teeny tiny thing. Why not think about it in a larger scale? And the average person thinks, well, my God, OMG.
Don't say that to Boomer. He builds a pendulum that's 12 foot 650 pounds.
That's how big that would have to be? I mean, the thing is, instantly in my head it says, how big is the Hoover Dam? Duh, it's a tiny little thing, but how big is the lake behind it?
Yeah.
I mean, if you took a drinking bird and built enough of them to take up the same space, the same volume, the same area as the Hoover Dam, and its lake behind it, Lake Mead, duh, the drinking birds would produce at least twice as much energy.
No, but they produce a hell of a lot.
Yeah. But, hey, do you know how big Lake Mead is?
If the energy's free anyway, who cares?
Exactly.
I did a video called Wasting Free Energy, and I had like a solar deal going on and other things. I have earth battery going on, and I just left the lights on, you know, through the whole deal. I wasn't paying for it.
What about, instead of putting gutters on my house, I just put a whole bunch of Lord Kelvin generators?
Well, there you go.
It's been estimated by scientists and mathematicians that this one
the single state of North Dakota has enough wind power to generate all of the electricity that the United States needs. In 1 year, it could produce all the electricity we need for the next 10 years.
Well, see, and therein lies the thing there. It's all in planning. So if you took and used everything that we've got access with thermal vents, volcanoes, there's rivers, there's waterfalls, wind power, solar power, and you designed an infrastructure to where maybe the guy in the next state is giving you electricity while the guy in the next state is giving you electricity. If you live in the Windy City, why not take advantage of that? Build a bunch of turbines. And if you're worried about birds getting chopped up in turbines, then do something high-tech and put a screen in front of it, for Pete's sake.
All right, 85% of Nevada belongs to the federal government. 85%. 25% of the state of Nevada has enough sunshine to produce all of the electricity using solar panels for the entire United States.
Yeah, and it doesn't just even have to be the solar panel itself. There's heat but coming off the streets that are thermal electrics. You could do so much with just the heat off the blacktop of the street next to you that you'd be surprised with.
Yes.
Well, your low temperature dive differential Stirling engines underneath the tar.
And instead of spending thousands and thousands of dollars of basically going out there shoveling snow off the freeway every winter, why don't you plan ahead and put in that infrastructure a heat pad underneath the street itself, so that whenever the temperature drops down, it kicks on a little relay that starts heating up the street from the people over in the other state that already have enough heat and electricity going on. You never even have to worry about no doggone ice on your street anymore.
New York City has been doing that for over 100 years.
Well, see, there you go, man.
I mean, half of all of the big buildings in New York City are warmed or heated by steam. It's made by a central steam plant, and it's piped under the streets to the building, and that heat keeps the snow and ice. It melts it off the damn, off the, I'm sorry, street. Okay?
And the thing, we ain't got to worry about the word damn. Somebody's worse than me, finally.
All the distilled water you buy in stores comes from New York City.
Well,
it's the water that they heat and make steam with, they pop it through, it condenses as it warms the buildings, it loses its heat, the water condenses, it's distilled water. They bottle it and sell it.
We have every single answer to every single problem out there as far as in the so-called energy crisis / all the aggravations. You know what you could do with the thousands of dollars that you could save if you took some advice from like what New York did with your steam deal there? And not have to go out and shovel the snow every winter time. If you pre-planned ahead of time and you use the things that we're talking about, you've already got what you need. Using Muddy's idea, the compost idea. All right, well, you can run pipelines up underneath the doggone street, and all the farmers out there who have a compost heap have a unit built around there that you store the compost on top of this unit, and it keeps the streets hot during the wintertime.
Hey, I got an idea. The United States is crisscrossed. Unbelievable. If you actually saw a map of all the piping that is used to pump fuel, diesel fuel, gasoline, whatever, throughout the United States, why not use this piping system when we have floods in Mississippi and the Mississippi River overflows its banks and floods houses? Use this piping system to pump the water, the flood water, to the arid states like Nevada, Arizona. The aquifer is dropping by feet every year.
Yeah.
That's why we're having the droughts in the Midwest. Pump this water out there and put it in the aquifer.
Well, it'll be flooded next.
The government's...
It's there, we're just not using it correctly. We're pumping gasoline.
The governments that I can't really necessarily get all too concerned about are, for example, California and their drought. I mean, they live next to the ocean, and if they can't make desalination plants and pump water inland, then they're just not trying hard enough. It's just a case of, you know, if you got to do it. It's that simple. I mean,
exactly.
Build a pipeline. I mean, they spend millions of dollars building pipelines for everything else under the sun to send fossil fuels from point A to point B. Why not do the same for water?
Exactly, Shazam. Exactly.
So, you know, if anybody's thirsty in this day and age with the technology we got, it's either because it's intentional or it's because somebody just ain't paying attention. Because I got a clue for you guys. Plumbing's been around since way back before the Romans.
Yes, it has.
So, great program.
We've got everything we need. We just need to get together on the same page, you know. If there's a portion of the country that is going through lightning storms, you believe it or not, there are places on this earth because of the way that this earth, the thermoelectric generator and the static discharges of the atmosphere itself. You got lightning going 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Why not tap into that energy?
Exactly. You know, over 3,000 lightning strikes per second in the world.
Yeah.
3,000 lightning strikes per second. And a small lightning strike makes 20 tons of nitrogen.
Yeah. And you don't even have to like hang any more wires. You got plenty of wires that you could use anyway, but I mean just send it across wirelessly. Tesla showed you how to do that. A lightning bolt hits a Tesla tower over here, and the charge goes down, hits a primary, pumps up a secondary, sends the energy out in a waveform clear across the other side of the planet to a resonating coil, and it goes down and charges up capacitor banks, which then in turn goes down and runs inverters, charges battery banks, which runs inverters, and charges up your house.
The problem is, and Westinghouse, it was the first one to come up with the problem. You can't put a meter on it.
Well, you know, that's why the average Joe's just got to do it, man.
You can't charge people for something that's free.
Well, go out there and find you one of these junk man artists that have a MIG welder or TIG welder or wire welder or a stick welder that goes around and they get all this kind of junk, right?
Yeah.
And go up there and say to that man, say, look, dude, you got some really beautiful art. Could you make me a piece of artwork that looks just like a tree? Right? And so he'll weld it all together. You got this nifty iron tree now, and you got it painted up. It looks just like a tree. Plug it down in your yard, so now your homeowners association can't even holler about it. But guess what you got now? You got one heck of an antenna.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like a tree.
You can't put a meter on something that's free, but you can charge for the tree. See what I'm saying? You make it something that can collect the free energy and turn it into usable energy.
Yeah.
The machine costs money, and you can sell the machine. Then all of a sudden, somebody's got money, they can buy the machine, then they get all the free energy they want.
Yeah, there's plenty of industry that could be created from alternative energy. There's lots of ways to make money from it. You don't have to sell the actual electricity. You could sell your services to build the device to get the energy.
Here we go.
And maintenance, you know?
Yes. And the maintenance, you're right.
Yeah. So, you know, there you go. It all starts off from the little simple basic idea, you know, even as simple as a toy. And if you can't learn from it and you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough because nature's like saying, hey, look, you know, I got a lot of power. Why don't you use it? Nature blow your house over, man. I mean, completely over.
Hey, she'll slap you upside the head. Yeah.
Nature will literally put your house in another state.
You weren't paying attention.
And so, instead of building your house that would, beat up by nature, learn how to work with nature. Build you a dome house that the wind just kind of like this scuffs off and goes on around, you know, doesn't hurt nothing. But in the process, you got this massive turbine sitting out there disguised as whatever. And as nature's blowing by with the tornado, either using the vacuum created by the funnel cloud or the actual wind pressure itself, or even the flying debris for that matter. use that to charge up some doggone storage banks, and then whenever nature goes on down the road and the rest of the power grid's out, you're still lit up.
Yep. I love it.
And you could get out there and you could say after the storm, when everybody else is complaining how they ain't got no lights, and saying, you know, it sure is a beautiful day in the neighborhood. Sorry about your house there, brother. You know? It's the difference between the three little pigs that built. One built his house on out of sticks, and one built his house out of bricks and whatever. You know, it's obvious if you're going to build a house, plan ahead. Build the one out of bricks. It's a little sturdier.
Yeah.
You know, and use some aerodynamics to build it so that even the brick house won't come down. If you live near an earthquake zone, build your house to absorb it. Why could, that's, it drives me insane. We still build our house out of toothpicks when we know that we got things in nature that can literally wipe it out. I mean, job security wise, it keeps the roofers in business and it keeps the carpenters in business. But even at that, you know, maybe their business changes a little bit. You'll never have a carpenter be out of business if you've got interior work to be done to the house. There's still wood involved in that.
Yep.
So, you know, a little common sense could go a long ways in this world. I'm just saying, man. Not trying to be rude to the world, but, wake up and smell the roses. You know? Some people put flowers in their house to make the house smell good. That's a brilliant idea.
I was thinking in building and carpenters, art, this, that, and other, because recently I just had a run-in with some inspectors in the city of Grapevine, and the guy wanted me to do this, that, and other. I mean, he's an inspector. I mean, he wanted me to give him drawings of what I was building to prove that it was a one-hour firewall. Well, I did. And he said, no, you're building with 8-inch studs, and this drawing is for 3 5/8 studs. I said, duh, 8-inch is better. Well, you got to show me a drawing of a UL drawing, the United Laboratories, right?
Yeah.
Underwriters Laboratories, drawing approved by Underwriters Laboratories. Yeah, it's better. They don't make a drawing for every scenario. They make the minimum. No, they don't. They make a drawing for every one. It took me 3 days. Finally, I found a drawing that said it was Underwriters Laboratory drawing, and it said the minimum. Now, I took it to him, and, I'm sorry. No, you're an inspector. I'm a builder. I build it. You inspect. I've got to prove to you. You're supposed to know your job. I know my job. I know exactly what the heck I'm doing. I've done it for 51 years.
Well, you know, when it comes to the government, their solution for every single thing is another regulation and another tax. Mm-hmm. How's global warming going to be solved by taxing folks? Seriously.
Exactly.
Are you going to take that tax money and pay some alternative energy researchers to do the research to put out clean, free energy? Or are you going to take that tax money to add to the war machine to put another bomb in a plane to go over and mop somebody into the Stone Age?
Yep.
Hey, and people wonder why I call it mad science. Because it makes me mad. If we can learn and go as far as we have with just some toys, some concepts, some basic science from toys, you think the government ain't smart enough to be able to do that? Apparently not.
Evidently. It's obvious.
And you're talking about a better design for a structure, and this guy's want to argue with you over technicalities. Well, it don't say it on the paper. It's not the right deal, and this and that. And you're saying, well, you know, when that neighbor over there who used the panel hands that you're talking about, when his house blows over or falls over because of the earthquake, mine's still going to be standing. And isn't that your purpose, to make sure that this is safe? Is that why you're here?
Oh, man. It's like, some people just aren't capable of thinking for themselves or making a decision. They're scared of losing their job. So they want proof. They want you to prove to them, because they're the authorities. They're the inspector.
Yeah.
proves to people that you know what you're doing. The thing is, you know what you're doing, and you prove that you're doing better than the drawing, but they don't care. They want to see a drawing. I mean, because their job is on the line.
Well, next time that guy comes around and gives you a rash like that, calmly walk into the kitchen and get you up a spatula and go in there and calmly hand it to him, and he'll be like, "What's that for?" And he says, "Well, your face is, you tell him, well, your face is kind of stuck to that manual there. Are you going to have to, like, pry it off of there and pay attention to what I'm trying to say?"
Exactly. I mean, dadgum. Look, here's the deal. If I build a donut shop, now, they cook with grease, and most of the time they use natural gas. Some of them use electric. But they're cooking, okay? Nobody sleeps here. They go to work at 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning to make the donuts, so people going to work to stop and get their donuts and their coffee. All right? But now, if I build this place, I have to use metal studs. Every piece of sheetrock has to be fire-code sheetrock. All electric wiring must be encased in some kind of a metal jacket. If there's any backing in the walls for hanging cabinets and all, it has to be non-combustible wood, which now most cities are outlawing that. It has to be metal, a piece of flat 18 or 16 gauge metal behind the wall to hang the cabinets on. All these things for fire and safety. Nobody sleeps here. Yet you fill a house out of yellow pine, which is somewhere in the top 5 most combustible woods on the planet. You can build a house with yellow pine. Your sheetrock does not have to be fire code. It can be just normal sheetrock.
Yeah, you got cedar wood shakes.
And they sleep there. I mean, infants, babies that sleep in cages called cribs that can't even crawl, let alone walk. Indigent, crippled people, older people that can't get out of bed by themselves, sleep here. You can build a fire trap and sell it legally to people. And the inspectors will say, "Okay, come on, man. Where's the justice? Where's the rationality in this? Holy cow." Nobody had anything to say? Hello?
Yeah, I hear
you. Man.
Where'd she just go?
I don't know. Did I scare your mom?
Nah, I don't think so.
What do you think?
Man, I tell you what, that rain was coming down. While that rain was coming down, I mean, I was looking at the sheets of water coming off this roof. I was thinking about the power of that energy and that. I mean, this sheet, what, you know, like you watch the water come off the edge of the roof and it comes off in a bunch of streams. No. It came off in a thick sheet, over an inch thick.
Wow.
That's a lot of water.
A lot of water.
Yeah, I'm on the second highest hill around.
Well, see, and that's brilliant. You was talking about doing a Lord Kelvin deal kind of thing there and building up static charge, which you could also do the water wheel down inside there. I'm going to start a series off. And
I could have had one, a long, thin one all the way down the whole edge of that thing. I'd have put out some power.
Maybe you guys want to work in conjunction with me with our YouTube channels and such, is that I want to do a deal where we take and build all kinds of nifty little gizmos, like water wheels that you can put down inside your gutter, you know, and just do like build like a little doghouse that whenever it rains, you know, just something for the video, and you know, pour some water down the deal and watch the little light come on and just kind of spark ideas out there for people, and you know, we can share the videos and that such with each other, and make a series of videos of how-tos, things that you can do with just junk laying around. What do you think?
I love it.
Oh, yeah.
So, if it's going to rain anyway, you might as well use the potential energy. I mean, Texas is like the cornered the market on rain here recently, so, you know.
Oh, yeah. What? Man, there were houses where the water came up halfway up them. Oh, yeah. My goodness. I'm on second-class teller out, though, so I'm happy with that.
Under a drought for the past 4 years, but now suddenly we're getting all that 4 years worth of rain at one time, like in a 2 or 3 month period.
Yeah.
You know, that's a wonderful thing about you there, Boomer. You say, yep, 2 more years. Yep, 1 more year. I got some more money to buy some more boats and get some of these free boats. And did you sell them, suckers? Because your dream came true, more than came true.
I'm waiting for the water to go down now. The water said they go high. The Army Corps of Engineers has put out a ban on people putting boats in the lake because when you put something in water, you actually raise the level of the water. And they're scared that if all the people that have boats start putting them back in the water, well, we're already 15 feet over normal. Well, duh, if enough people put boats in the water, it can raise the lake another 3 inches, and 3 inches will go over the spillway.
Man.
So when you dam up there between you and me, that's got some crack in it, and they say that thing's going to break. Oh, my goodness.
Well, you know, with that said, there's a place down here in Missouri next to the river. It's actually before you go across to Illinois, there's actually a ferry that you can park your vehicle on and it'll take you across the river. But anyway, there are houses all along that river that are set up on float systems. The house is built like on a barge kind of thing. And as the river raises up, not just the house itself, but the one-car garage or two-car garage with it all raises up, and so they have a boat that's tied to the house that in case of a flood, they can still get off the house and go to work. So
yep.
If people can live in a situation like that, and we know that there's a potential, if there's a dam down the street from me, and I know that I'm in a lower zone, and if that dam ever broke, that I'd be flooded out, I would build my house accordingly. If I lived in Tornado Alley to where I knew that there was going to be a potential tornado, I would build me my house accordingly. The same would apply where, no matter where you live. And even if you live in a place where you're talking about total extremes such as a volcano, there are materials out there that you could literally build a house that could withstand it, you know?
Yes, there is.
I mean, it sounds science fiction, but think about how they're going to be living in the future. In the future of mankind, if we make it that far, if the knuckleheads don't blow us up before all that, you think they're going to be talking about putting energy devices in the water gutter? No, they already had that figured out. They'll be using everything to its maximum efficiency and cleanliness and so in tune with nature, it'll be secondhand. You won't even think about it. You know, when you're walking across the floor, you're charging up batteries.
Mm-hmm.
So, there you go. You don't even have to turn the light off behind you. As you're walking on the floor, the piezoelectrics not only light the next step up, but it also turns the one off behind you.
Yep. It's like I said, right now, the South Midwest is flood. It's inundated with water. It's flooding. Why aren't we using the infrastructure that is already in place to pump fossil fuels all over the United States? Use it to pump the excess water out to the desert and refill the aquifer.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Because you could shut the oil off for a bit and pipe in the water. You could flush up the oil at the other end and have the water.
You've got all this area that's flooding. Duh, people can't go anywhere. It's like back in the early 80s when 1/3 of the entire state of Arkansas was 15 feet underwater. All that water, well, duh, all those cars weren't going anyplace. Nobody was using gasoline there. So the piping system that was pumping gasoline or diesel fuel to that area, why not use that piping to pump the excess water out to the aquifer?
Yep.
Or over the water sections where they ain't got no water.
Exactly. Aquifer is a storage tank for fresh water.
Tell everybody to fill up their swimming pool.
Here's the other deal. If you take a bunch of containers, every pool and everything like that, and just spread it all over and stuff like that, and let the mosquitoes breed, and then when Jade Helm comes, they want to get out of here real quick. That there's efficiency, Bubba. Let the mosquitoes do the work.
There you go. Lord have mercy.
Well, I'll tell you one thing's for sure. There's a lot of brilliance going on, man. I wish that more people would put together a round table all over this globe and just continue to start talking and working on solutions like this. And, you know, never, ever underestimate even the simplest idea, because that simple idea, like I say, don't look at it one-dimensionally. Step back and look at the big picture, you know. Or take that toy and put it as close to your face as you possibly can and imagine what it would be like if it was scaled up to a full size where it was bigger than you. What kind of potential power and uses could you do for
it? That's one of the ideas I had with Boomer. He's got these big, 8-foot steel discs?
Yes. No. They're 5.5 foot.
Either way, you know what, you get that and you turn that into a low temperature diaphragm Stirling engine by painting the top black, letting the sun beat on it, and to put the bottom right straight down on the ground with a little water to sit there and absorb the heat. Doggone, I bet you could sit there and grab a hold of the crank and go up and down all day just like riding a church bell.
You know what I would do with that huge steel disc? I would take something that I learned from Muddy that he does with his actual flux wind turbines. I would take a little bit of knowledge that Raymond told me about how many magnets he's got access to, and I'd build the biggest actual flux wind turbine in the history of time.
That's his plan. That's what he got them for.
Cool.
You know, when you were talking earlier about that, looking at little toys and scaling them up,
yep.
Boomer, you don't say anything like that to Boomer. He doesn't do anything small. He wants to make it big.
I say Boomer for president, man, because I like folks to think big.
Boomer for president rather than Hillary for what do you call it?
Dictator?
Yeah,
so, you know, if you go
for president,
you're going to take along that scale.
He even predicted the weather, man.
I got some 8-foot diameter wheels, and I'm thinking about if I put 1 foot sprigs out from it all the way around, then the outside would be 10-foot diameter, but the round wheel, if I took all these little magnets I've got and put them around there, I could probably get a couple of hundred around it, and then I put a couple of hundred little bitty coils, and it would turn at about roughly 1 RPM, but you would get about 89,000 excitements.
Hey guys, I got to throw a little bummer in there. I just caught a message from Justin that one of our YouTube friends out here, Lockmanship, just passed away. He had a heart attack.
Oh no.
Wow, and I was thinking about him last night.
So for his family and all of our networks, we send our love and condolences out to you. That's a terrible thing. Folks, that's why I tell you, you gotta love each other. You gotta treat each other the best you possibly can, because you never know from one day to the next. We take for granted our friendships and our love for one another out here in this world, because it's like, you know, you got such a good friend. It's like they're always going to be your good friend, and you know, it's just sad that at any given moment any of us could be taken away from each other. And you know, with that said, our time is precious. Our time is valuable. We should be spending our time trying to make this world a better place. And, you know, each of us has something to contribute. You know, it's sad that to deliver a message such as that, you know, and like I said, our love and our condolences for all the different networks out here.
Lockmanship was a good man.
Yeah.
A really good
man. Waffle House. He broke out our redneck Waffle House credit card and had breakfast out there and coffee and talked and had a ball just to meet him. Great man. Very great man.
Well, it breaks my heart to lose one of ours, you know. That's just, that's never a good thing, you know. And
he would do this.
In all actuality, all of us are our family, and we don't want to lose anybody out there. And all I can say to you folks is that, you know, nobody comes into Shaziz's house or leaves Shaziz's house without getting a hug, because, you know, I want you to know, if it's the last thing I ever say to you, I want you to know you were loved, and I want you to know that you were cared for and respected, and that's just the way that I live my life. You know, I feel like that you've blessed me with your time, and I've had enjoyment for hanging out with you and the conversations that we had, and it's my honor to be able to have these friends such as what we got here on the Knights of the Round Table. So, you know, I want each and every one of you guys to know, man, if it's my last word to you, I'm hoping that it's a good word. I'm hoping that we never leave in frustration with each other and that kind of stuff. And so to Lockman Ship's family out there, I just want to send my heartfelt thanks for him, and, you know, peace and love to your family and that.
He's a real smart one. He's the inventor of a lock that if you lose the key, the new key would work, and the old one couldn't be used again up to 7 times. Pretty cool thing. Very ingenious. Heck of a brain. Wish the best for the family. If we can get some information, we'll see if we can do something to help out.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Nice. Anything, just something as simple as letting them know you love them and that kind of stuff there, and, you know, passing on a good story of the times you guys had to sit there and share with each other, because in his lifetime, he's had a lot of adventures and a lot of friends to enjoy that with, and he's brought a lot of good to the world. You know, something as simple as just a conversation with a friend that's feeling down at the time. I'm sure he's been there as well, and he's been there for people just like all of us would. You know, we kind of gravitate together. All of us, it's not just, I don't believe in, it's just a coincidence that like-minded individuals show up and just kind of hang out and talk about things. I believe that all of us have a feel and a need and a love for humanity, that we want to do something good. That's what the Knights of the Round Table is all about, you know.
And he was also one of those that was going around serving the notices to the judges and everything, you know, about common law and stuff like that.
Well,
he was
fighting for freedom for people out there in this world, so, you know, can't say enough good about an individual that takes time out of their own life and expends that energy to go out and try to do for others such as that. You know, it's a sad day, but it's also a good day to remember all the good, you know?
Yes, absolutely. The man did a lot of good.
Moment of silence.
Yeah, I was about to say that myself. I was kind of choked up there, man.
Yep, same here.
That's what the moment of silence is about, is a chance to reflect and think, and I think that's what we were doing.
Yep.
So,
yep.
Oh, man. We need to get in contact with the family, see if we can help, so...
Yeah, if somebody can get some information, we can put it out there on the networks and see what we can pull together. I mean, that's one thing we do good here together is in times like this, we can pull together.
Mm. Yeah, boom. Hey, we're going to go up there and visit Shaziz here sometime soon.
Real soon.
We need to. We need to. Yep.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, I'm inspired to play a song. We're kind of down to the wire there. This song's about 4 minutes and 57 seconds. And so I want to play this for Lockman Ship. Give me a second.
Oh, I didn't know. I can't tell when you're playing the song.
No, I was choked up a bit. I also want to play it for everybody else.
Yeah.
Because it's a little reminder to enjoy life, to love each other and treat each other well. Well, you had the chance. Because you never do know. And so with that said, we'll go ahead and end the show. And I want to play this song. It's called I Hope You Dance. And it's just a reminder to live life the best you can under the current circumstances. Peace and love, everybody. You've been listening to Knights of the Round Table.
God bless.
Oh,
young woman!
Man!
Ma'am, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
Well, that's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they'd put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot.
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 It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance where we're able. We do routines to call the scenes to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are more mid-able. So many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're rock and mad in Camelot. We sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the Pramalot.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
Terrible. All rise for the king, Sir Zerus the Terrible, and the Knights of the Round Table.